Welcome to Clover Club, a podcast about curious conversations and stories intended to make you laugh and learn. And welcome back to part two with Lauren Iddens. We have so much information for you. Thank you for joining us again. Let's get started. Oh, this is actually the perfect next question. I make more than my spouse, and I want to grow money of my own separately from our joint accounts. What's the best option? Would it all come out in a divorce? So I know we've kind of touched on this, but if there's anything specifically to this question that we could add.
A spin on this question, and this is another compliance, not all situations are right for every person. If it makes sense for you and you and your spouse are like, well, where do I invest my money? We've got money to invest. Where do I do it? I like Roth contributions.
Okay.
So if you have a 401k, or 457 or something like that, you should have the option of making a Roth contribution or a traditional contribution. Traditional is pre-tax, which means, we're going to use round numbers here, if you make $100,000 and you make a traditional contribution of $10,000, it's like that $10,000, you didn't make it that year. The IRS only charges you ordinary income on the $90,000.
Okay.
Now, that $10,000 goes into your 401k. It grows and grows and grows and grows. When you pull that money out in retirement, every dollar of your contribution and all of that growth is taxed at ordinary income rates. Mm-hmm. So let's say someone who's 40 right now, they're retiring on average age 65, 25 years from now. Hopefully that is a whole lot of compounded interest and earnings. Where do you personally think that interest rates are going to be in 25 years? It's not right or wrong. We don't know. Where do you think they're going to be?
I have no idea. Probably higher than they are now.
Yeah. I mean, I think higher. I think higher.
Yeah.
We have had lower taxes for like the past 8 years, but that's been totally a fluke, and that's getting ready to expire. Mm-hmm. Taxes are probably going to be higher. So you can pay the devil now that you know, or you can pay the one we don't know in decades.
Yeah.
So the alternative to traditional contributions are Roth or after-tax contributions. If you make $100,000, you put in $10,000, you don't get a deduction. You pay ordinary income on the $100,000 that you made this year. That money grows tax-deferred, just like with the traditional. But in the 25 years, every dollar comes out completely tax-free.
That's awesome.
Think of it another way. With the traditional traditional contribution route, if you want to receive $10,000 from your IRA or 401k, you have to take out more than $10,000 because we have to account for taxes.
Right.
So there's a lot of shrinkage.
We don't like shrinkage.
So I love Roth. Now, that was just more of the like taxable category. Mm-hmm. Another reason why I like retirement contributions is that money is there and locked away until 59 and a half. Mm-hmm. You can't go in and pull money out essentially for a new car, for renovating your house. Like you have to come up with the money for those things through some other savings and intentions. Yeah. So I like retirement savings. I like Roth because of how much it will likely save you in taxes down the road. Mm-hmm. And then the vehicle could be 401k. If you've already maxed out your 401k at work, you can look at if you can still make IRA contributions. You get into some income limits, definitely. You also get into some more complex strategies, like perhaps a after-tax Roth conversion.
Ooh.
But the limits on dollars in are also different in an IRA versus a 401k.
Okay.
For 2024, if you are under 50 with a 401k, you can currently contribute $23,000 a year.
Okay.
In an IRA, again, that's a retirement account outside of your employer, it's $7,000 a year if you're less than 50. So I want you to be doing all of it, mm-hmm. but if you have to start somewhere, as much money as you can, that 401k is going to let you do it. And I believe in the power long-term of the Roth.
Yeah. Makes perfect sense. Okay, cool. This one we maybe should have swung around to the beginning, but I know nothing about investing. Can you tell me how the stock market works like I'm a child?
Yes. And this is important for people to know.
Yeah.
The stock market is a representation of a bunch of companies where you can own a little tiny piece of that company. And the price per share is what people think that that company is worth now or what it could be worth based on a variety of factors like profitability, cash flow, business plans, acquisitions, economic moat, meaning like how unique are you in the space that you operate, mm-hmm. other competitors. So it's a ton of factors, but that creates a price per share. There's also different style investing with stocks. You have value style investing, growth, and blend.
Okay.
With value style stocks, you're traditionally looking to buy something when it's on sale. You think that, well, the stock is already down. It theoretically shouldn't go down that much more. Mm-hmm. You can also have dividend-paying stocks that fall under the umbrella of value. Dividend-paying stocks tend to move a little bit slower and steadier, but they have a regular dividend that they pay. And I'm going to come back to that.
Okay.
On the complete other end, you have growth-style stocks. You want to get in at any price because this is just a really hot and exciting company. Okay. Big buzzword or company right now is NVIDIA in the AI space. Okay. Not a particularly new company, but last year I think they were up 230 something percent.
Wow.
Year to date, I think they're already up another 70 to 80%.
Am I invested in that?
You do have some exposure. Okay. Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. That is an example of, wow, that stock is high.
Yeah, let's get in.
But it's going to continue to do really impressive things. And then blend is sort of stocks that have characteristics of both. Mm-hmm. Maybe not super hot and exciting like NVIDIA, but they're not super discounted. Or they don't really fit into either category.
Okay.
The S&P 500 is sort of considered blend. And I'm going to take that a step further. So the S&P 500 is what most people classify as the market. And okay. You need to know what someone means when they say the market. It used to be the Dow or the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Mm-hmm. That's not what people mean when they say the market anymore.
Okay.
The word's the same, but the correct understanding of are you thinking of the same thing when I say the market?
Yeah.
And then also when you hear on the news, and this gets to wording of things, if you hear a newscaster say, the stock market crashed 100 points today. Well, 100 points compared to what? Mm-hmm. So the S&P is currently trading around 5,200 and some change. 100 points on that is about 1.9% drop.
Okay.
So that'd be not a great day. That's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
Terminology like the market crashed 100 points is going to make you feel more scared than what the numbers actually say.
Crash is dramatic.
Crash is dramatic versus just like the stock market was down 100 points today. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, 100 doesn't sound good, but like you need to know what is that 100 on.
Right.
The only other thing I would add to that is we've talked a lot about stocks. Mm-hmm. There are also bonds. Okay. So stocks are a bit sexier. You tend to make more money in stocks. Bonds are on the more conservative side because we're not going to use the safe word. They're more on the conservative side. They tend to fluctuate less, but lower return. There is a bond market as well, but traditionally the market is going to be the stock market and it's going to be the S&P 500.
Okay.
Bonds gets into a whole other realm and you've got bond math and it is actually fairly complicated. And that's another area where when you are figuring out the advisor you want to work with, what do they propose as the right allocation and mix for you between stocks and bonds? There's a lot of advisors out there that think regardless of your risk profile, you need some allocation to bonds. My personal business structure is different. So Erica's portfolio is completely different from everyone else's, which is completely different from mine, which is completely different from my husband's. Mm-hmm. So you are young. you're comfortable with fluctuations.
Yeah.
You don't need bonds. We're trying to make a lot of money.
Yes.
You don't need bonds. Not every advisor is going to take that approach. That's something else that I would suggest that people ask and figure out how they feel about the answer that that advisor gives.
Yeah.
Know what you own. Know what it's likely to fluctuate both up and down. Mm-hmm. When I recommend investments for clients, again, I try to be super upfront. And in 2022, it was a bad year for everything. Mm-hmm. The stock market, the S&P 500, was down for the calendar year about 18%. Mm-hmm. The growth part of the market was down closer to 30.
Wow.
I call that out and say, like, are you going to be okay with that drop? Well, 2023 comes along, growth came roaring back, and you made a lot of money in growth. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, this kind of wraps together a lot of different theories about stay invested, like make sure that you're comfortable for the ride. Yeah. Things come back after they're down. You would have actually made more money if you look at the start of 2022 through the end of 2023. So huge down year 2022, big up year 2023. You made more money in growth stocks, even though you were down more in 2022 because you were up so much more in 2023 than if you were in conservative investments that were down way less in 2022, but they were up a lot less in 2023.
That's cool.
Super interesting.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. All right, cool. Hopefully all the children listening understand the stock market now. Next question. What's a realistic expectation for how much my money can grow?
So this was a fun homework assignment for me. The S&P over the past 10 years has averaged 12.4% per year.
Wow.
That's a huge rate of return.
Yeah.
And if you go back even 15 years, 16.2% per year for the S&P 500. Big, big, big numbers. Now, that is not a number that I feel comfortable telling clients they can expect. Like, not even close.
So many variables, of course.
So many variables. Most portfolios, unless you just own an S&P 500 index, they're not going to mirror that identically. The software program that I use that runs, you know, modeling around all the potential different returns that you could have over a 20-year period, it spits out a potential annualized rate of return of 6.5% for a growth portfolio.
Okay.
Way, way less.
Yeah.
So if pressed to give a number to someone, I would say between 6 and 8%. I really don't want to model higher than 8%. And if we are modeling 8% per year, I say we might not target that.
Yeah.
And what I'll do is I'll go back and I'll look at their actual performance. And hopefully they're a client we've had for 5+ years. So like you actually have some good track record there. Mm. And a lot of times it falls in that 6 to 8% window. Mm-hmm. Very few clients are averaging even an 11%, which is still shy of what the S&P is saying over the 10 years, because you do have emotional decisions. You have years where maybe people can't contribute as much. Mm-hmm. So there was less money in the account, and then you add money and then the market's down a little bit. You have a whole lot of factors that go into that.
Yeah.
So assume for a stock portfolio that is at least moderately to growth orientedly, if that's a word, invested 6 to 8%, depending on a whole lot of variables.
Yeah, perfect. More than it would make under your bed.
It is. I thought of something that we did not include on the education piece. Ooh. That is important.
Okay.
What are the different investment vehicles? We talked about account types, but like what's a stock versus a mutual fund versus an ETF?
Mm-hmm.
All of these are different wrappers. So a stock is an individual company, one individual company, a Home Depot, an Nvidia, an Amazon, a Google, one.
Okay.
A mutual fund or an ETF or a unit investment trust, UIT, is going to be a basket of stocks. They can also be a basket of bonds.
Okay.
Not to leave bonds out of the conversation, but it is a basket of them. And with a basket, you reduce your risk of one company failing spectacularly.
Mm.
So if we kind of go back to like the cryptocurrency and like gambling money analogy, think of one individual stock like a roulette wheel. And I don't play roulette, so I'm probably not going to get this right. But with one stock, you're saying, I'm betting that I'm going to hit red 7. Mm-hmm. And if you hit red 7 and red 7 does well, you're going to make a big payout.
Yeah.
Versus a mutual fund or an ETF or a UIT where you have many stocks included, you're just betting that any red number is going to win.
Yeah.
Your payout's going to be a bit less, but you have a higher likelihood that a red number will hit versus specifically red 7.
So those people who are concerned about, air quotes, safety in investing, something like a mutual fund would be like, I would think, psychologically more comfortable.
Potentially, you have to know, is this a growthy mutual fund? Is it a more conservative mutual fund? Mm. But yes, diversification can reduce risk.
Okay.
And even diversification of your fund manager. So I am your wealth strategist, and then I have a list of mutual fund managers that I like. So there is a portfolio manager for each of these mutual funds, and they are actively buying and selling the individual stocks for you.
Okay.
They don't ask my opinion. They don't ask your opinion. They're just actively doing this based on their research, their outlook, and a whole series of parameters that they have, and deciding what they think the fund should own and what they don't want to own. Mm-hmm. And that's called active management.
Okay.
I'm a big believer in active management. You don't want to own everything.
Yeah.
You know, the good, the bad, and the ugly. You only want the good and the beautiful.
Yeah.
And mutual funds and ETFs and, well, mutual funds and ETFs can be active or passive. Passive meaning you just own everything.
Okay.
There's no one making that decision about this is a good stock, this is a bad stock. So you also need to know, is your investment active or passive? And why, if it's passive or active, are you owning that type of strategy?
Mm-hmm.
And different managers look at research differently. You know, there's someone that, interestingly, I think Tesla is a wildly volatile stock. And I think Elon Musk as a person is insane. Like, I would not want him running a company that I certainly was working at, or to the extent that I can control it, where my money is invested.
I wouldn't want him making me a ham sandwich.
Right. But one of the conservative growth funds that I own, if you can bear with me on that oxymoron, actually really likes Tesla as a stock because they are doing something different with their dealerships. They don't really have dealerships, which are very expensive cost centers for automakers. And so long term, they think that that is an interesting business model for Tesla.
And that makes sense.
So different opinions are good.
Yeah.
They own Tesla in their portfolio. It's a fund that I personally own. Different way of looking at it.
Yeah. I think too, one thing for me is I want there, this is why I love you, I want there to be a little distance between me and every single thing I'm invested in, because I know that there's companies that I'm invested in that I don't agree with, but I also don't give a shit because other people are also invested in them, and this is about my money. And so I think too, sometimes people are like, oh, well, I want to make sure that I put my money in things that feel comfortable and are in alignment with my values. And in almost any other category, I would support that ideology, but not when it would potentially risk how much I can scale my income or my wealth, you know?
So let's take that to a political place, given that this is an election year.
Yeah.
I will get the comment or the question, I am terrified that XYZ will be elected or reelected, whatever people's opinions are. And we have clients that are both staunch Republicans, staunch Democrats, and somewhere in the middle.
Sure.
And what I say is, my job is to make you the most money that you're going to let me.
Mm-hmm.
And if this person is elected, is that going to change you spending money? And for the majority of people, it doesn't. You're still going to go to the grocery store. You are still going to go to Target. You're still going to buy a new pair of shoes. Like, your normal spending continues.
Yes.
And what you're investing in the stock market is business profitability.
Mm-hmm.
People don't stop spending their money. A president only speeds up or slows down something that's already happening. So, you know, yes, there can be a shift, but it's not a complete reversal.
Right.
Starbucks is not suddenly going to stop selling coffee. I'm not going to stop buying coffee.
Right.
It, you know, the world keeps revolving. And I do tell people, try to take your political or emotional beliefs apart from the concept of the investments making you money.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's super important. Well said. All right, couple more questions. If the stock market crashes, should I have cash and gold on hand?
People a lot of times want and get very excited about, I want to invest when the market is down because that's what we're supposed to do, right? Yes, we want to buy low, sell high, but you can continue waiting to get that money invested, and it could take you years. Mm-hmm. And let's take last year for an example. 2022, the market was down the whole year. People were super fed up with it. And emotionally, it can be hard to get your money invested when you've seen the market go down and down and down, because why would you invest it thinking that like it could still go lower? Like, why would I invest now?
Sure.
The biggest upswings come right after the very low. So almost very beginning of 2023, the market shot up. And then it was a very low volatility year until the third quarter. Market was up.
Yeah.
You would have probably missed out on making roughly 24% in the market mm-hmm. if you were waiting for that pullback to get your money invested. Mm-hmm. So sure, keep a little money on the side. I mean, I'm talking like 5%, okay. which is a pretty small amount, and have the rest of it invested. Because if we know going in, there will be down years and we're not trying to avoid them, but maybe we can add a little bit of extra. Sure, maybe you can get some oomph, but it's having your money invested for the long run that is going to be most powerful. Absolutely no one can time the market effectively, consistently, or even regularly. Like you might get lucky once, you might get lucky twice. It's not going to continue. Mm-hmm. So I'm a big believer in keep it invested. Like be within the risk parameters that are comfortable for you. And again, this is not money that you're going to be spending in a year or less. And that's really having your money kind of spread out a bit, all those red numbers, have a little bit of value, have some blends, have some growth. Because when one area pops, your money is there. Mm-hmm. Last year, the growth part of the market, huge range, but we're going to say the growth part was up between 30 and 50%. The general market was up 24%. The dividend part of the market up maybe more 10%.
Okay.
You needed your money there and in growth to have that big upswing.
Yeah.
So it has to already be there.
Yeah. Makes sense. Perfect.
Oh, gold. Let me tell you gold. That's another one I have a strong opinion on.
Great.
People used to love gold because they thought it was a stable store of value. Mm-hmm. And then there was sort of like, you know, when inflation spikes, gold does well. That's not true as much now as it used to be.
Okay.
Gold, the price of gold is not tied to the actual amount of gold in circulation.
Okay.
So that's just different. And there are other hedges against inflation that I think work better than gold. Mm-hmm. And depending on the time period you look at, I haven't pulled my exact numbers on this. I should have. Over the past 3 and 5 years, gold has probably made you 1% to 2% per year.
Oh, wow.
Okay. I mean, pretty ridiculous and way less than inflation.
Yeah.
So gold is not the, we're not going to use the S word, conservative alternative that many people think it is.
Yeah.
You, again, you need to understand what are you owning in gold and why are you owning it? Mm-hmm. Do you see how much it can be down when it's down? And are you comfortable with the low level of growth that it could provide and what that does to your portfolio?
Yeah. I think too, like if I'm reading, and I think I remember who wrote this question, like if there's an apocalyptic end of time situation, gold bars aren't going to be the currency. It's going to be like water and bullets and food. So
yeah.
You're not going to lug around your gold
canned
bars.
Food, a can opener.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes people will ask me like truly catastrophic, almost end of the world scenarios. And I'm like, if that comes to fruition, none of us are worried about the stock market.
Correct.
We are worried about absolute food, water, shelter, survival.
Yes, exactly.
Gold's not going to help unless you throw a bar at someone's head.
Right, at a zombie's head. That'd be funny. All right, next question. Oh, I like this next one. Should my business be investing or just me personally?
I am a big believer in relying on your other professionals. So we've talked about estate attorneys. Your CPA is one that gets involved in this question. You want a great CPA. You want a CPA that is active in making suggestions to you. So when someone asks me that question, I say, we need to loop in your CPA and understand what your situation is. But yes, with the caveat, this is not money that your business needs for payroll, for any reason, for, again, call it like 2 years.
Yeah.
But money above and beyond that, yes, absolutely. But you have to have the planning to know what is liquid, what are you going to need, and maybe setting up if you are truly a very small business, a solo 401k. You can make contributions as the employee, and your business can make matching contributions as the employer.
Yeah.
So you get double benefit. So that is a way of your business, quote unquote, making investments, but you can also have a business account. There's things like profit sharing accounts if you do have more employees than just yourself. So there are vehicles out there, absolutely, and some have big tax advantages. Some are going to be tax neutral. The things you can invest in are going to be essentially the same across every type of account we've talked about so far, except for your 401ks.
Okay.
401ks are going to have a very specific list of investments. That's all that you can invest in, whatever's on that list. Everything outside of that is going to be a huge, like, endless possibilities. An IRA, a taxable account, a solo 401k, you know, it can be individual stocks, mutual funds, bonds, ETFs, UITs. I mean, the world is your oyster when it comes to variety there. Mm-hmm. So it's not like, well, in my business account, I can only own this type of an investment. Okay. Or in my IRA, I can only buy this. No. And that's a big misconception.
Okay.
You can own the same things in all of your accounts as long as it's not a 401k. Or you can own different things because maybe we have different strategies.
Okay.
Your IRA is very long-term money. Your taxable account might be something that in 5 years you're going to need. So we're still growing it slowly,
yeah,
but different than the long-term retirement money.
Okay. I like that. Lauren, I have one more question for you. What percentage of my income should I ideally be saving?
As much as possible.
Okay.
And that might get into... you might have to make sacrifices somewhere. I'm going to be the big bearer of bad news on that one, but as much as possible. And most people are not there yet when they come to me, and I expect that.
Yeah.
So we go back to, what are you already doing? Can we increase that by $100 this month?
Mm-hmm.
And in 3 months, can we increase that by another $50? Because you're just paying yourself,
yeah,
which is perfect. I mean, that's what you want. That money's not going towards taxes. That money's not going towards anyone but you and your future. So have in mind what the annual maximums are, and they change every year.
Mm.
Currently, like I said, if you're less than 50 years old, it's $23,000 into your 401k.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on income limits, the IRA is $7,000 per person per year. Goes up by typically $500 a year. So factor that in.
Mm-hmm.
Get to where you're maxing things out. Now, the flip side is, I totally understand there are people that are like, I will never be able to do $23,000 a year.
Yeah.
That's where you need, full circle, the financial plan.
Mm-hmm.
When are you looking at retiring, and how much are you going to need to pull out from your investments? Because how much you save is going to determine how much you can pull out.
Makes sense.
And if you're someone that's like, I need to pull out $20,000 a month to live on, you better have a big pool of money that can support that.
Yeah.
Or if you say, I live super leanly. I won't have a mortgage. I won't have a car payment. I don't have expensive hobbies. I like to read books from the library. Okay. Well, then we can get by with less, but we just have to run the numbers to know. So I'm not trying to side skirt the question and not give you a percentage.
Yeah.
You don't typically want your mortgage to be roughly more than like 30% of your income.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's typically the biggest piece, but there's so much else that factors into your monthly expenses.
Yeah.
And you still have to have room for saving and investing. Mm-hmm. So you have to start somewhere and you have to make it a priority to do more until you're at the level which the plan says you're golden. And at that point, if you continue to save more, you're only giving yourself more flexibility. So there's a lot of people our age that really want to retire early. Like they're pretty burnt out on going nonstop. But with people that actually hit retirement age, there is a fear of, well, what am I going to do now?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where it's financial freedom comes into play. You have enough money to retire. You can absolutely do it. That mental freedom of knowing that they can makes them feel so much better than, I can't quit working. I have to do this to pay my bills.
Yeah.
I have a client, love her. She's saucy. She doesn't take crap from anyone. She worked at a law firm, and I think it was a pretty busy, rough place to work. And we updated her retirement plan kind of spur of the moment. She called me and was like, I need to know the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
She quit and she went and got a job at Trader Joe's.
Oh,
and
cool.
We were thinking like, oh, like you're doing like a corporate job at Trader Joe's. No, she's stocking shelves.
She's probably so relaxed.
Yeah, she says it's the best workout ever.
Yeah, oh, I bet.
But so she's still working and she doesn't need to. And she has moved from a desk job to a very physically intensive job.
Yeah.
It was the mental freedom to be like, I don't have to have this income, but like, I don't want to be bored. So
yes. Let
me do something different.
Love that. Total power move.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, awesome.
You just have to run the numbers and see what they say.
Yeah,
the numbers. The numbers don't lie. Mm-hmm. And if they don't look amazing in the beginning, okay, like I'm your partner in this. We will figure it out. I've never said to someone like, you failed a test, like hope you go and figure it out. It's like, okay. I always come to people with solutions before they can even say, well, what do you suggest?
Yeah.
And then we come up with like what actually is the right mix moving forward of spending versus savings versus like, hey, if you've got kids in private school that have braces and they're on a traveling soccer team right now, it might not work. But if you're committed to in 4 years when that situation is a little bit different, I can do more then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's plan on that.
Yeah.
But I'm going to remember that you said it and I'm going to come back around. I think I'm going to plug myself here. The things I like most about my relationship with clients, I'm your accountability buddy. And I take that seriously. And I don't think all advisors do that.
Mm-hmm.
I am sure some do. But if you tell me something, this is a goal and I want to do this, but it's not happening now, I need to come back to that and make sure that we then put it into place when you said that you can or reevaluate maybe the timeline for it.
Sure.
Because I'm not here to be your yes person.
Yeah. I love that. Lauren, thank you so much for answering all of our listener questions. This has been so informative, and I appreciate how thorough that your answers are. Is there anything you want to ask me?
So, a million questions, because I think that this is such a fun one-on-one relationship that I get to have with my clients, but it's also a really personal one.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want you to reveal anything that maybe you're not comfortable with everyone knowing about you. And also we have to like stay within the lines of what compliance is okay with.
Yeah.
Tell me how your perception of money has changed since we've started working together, if you're comfortable.
Oh, I'm very comfortable. I feel so much more confident in knowing that I have you as a partner to bounce questions off of. And I mean, this is, my mind immediately came to this. Maybe it was 2 years ago. Ish, I was like, Lauren, I can't do this anymore. I'm selling everything and I'm just gonna travel Europe. And you were like, okay, so let's like talk about what that looks like. And I had it planned out to a certain extent, but then you're like, what then? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. Like then maybe I just kill myself. Like, I don't know. Like, and you're like, I don't love this plan. But you helped me redirect like, hey, if that's something you could see yourself wanting to do at some point, why don't we adjust things and maybe invest more and kind of just do it safely. We'll use the S word for this, or at least just more responsibly as opposed to just blowing your life up and then having hopefully decades left to like be like, what have I done? So it's nice because I could see myself making some crazy ass choices and without somebody like you to help kind of guide me and educate me on doing it responsibly, who knows where I'd be. And I just feel a lot more like knowing that there is potential freedom makes me steadfast in being consistent with my contributions and keeping in mind, like I think I said to you a year or so ago, hey, like I'm about to get, I sold my Porsche and for a bunch of money. And I was like, I think I have a chunk of money here that I want to, let's just put this somewhere. Da, 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 da. So like, I never would put this much thought into things before. So it's nice that you challenge me to think about why I want to do things and what the ramifications of those choices are, and that it's not even necessarily there's a right and a wrong answer, but like, well, if you go down this path, this is what that looks like. And if you go down this path, this is what that looks like. Don't go down the path. So yeah, I feel super empowered.
I remember that conversation.
Did you get off the phone and you were like, oh my God.
When you wanted to sell everything and you were like, I don't know, like I'm going to spend the money and then when I come back, I'll start fresh.
Yeah.
And I thought that that was a very scary prospect. Yeah. Not that I don't believe in you, but that's hard. Yes. to start over. and I definitely think that there's been an evolution there and I love that. My goal is to never change people completely. I mean, certainly not. But how do we blend my maybe more conservative approach to making sure that the future stuff is there with what is your current lifestyle?
Yeah.
You are also a person that is very calm with fluctuations mm-hmm. in the market. And that is impressive given that the way you started all this was thinking you had kind of a good deal going with yeah. something and then, whoa, it wasn't what you thought. Mm-hmm. How do you help create separation between markets down, this is what I've got now, mm-hmm. and sticking with what we're doing? So how do you mentally, emotionally handle that on a everyday basis?
That's a really good question. I think, you know, I've experienced a lot of loss in my life, financially, emotionally. I talk about it very openly on this podcast. And I think I just have gotten to a point where I've never lost anything or weathered a storm that I haven't come out on the other side of. And so I think I just trust that no matter what happens, even if it's a worst case scenario, one way or another, I'm going to be okay. And then that, of course, partnered with trusting you and now knowing that I have somebody in place to help me manage my budding wealth that I genuinely do trust. I really have a set it and forget it kind of mindset. So like, I have no idea what my investments look like right now.
I do.
Yeah. Are they good? Mm-hmm. Yay. See? So I don't know. I think that there's all of the big scary stuff has happened. And so I just sort of, I'm like, I don't know. I'm way more present focused with my emotions. And then I think it's just an abundant kind of trust that I'm doing the right things that I should be doing with the right people. And I believe that I will get to the outcome that I want because of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a super individualized response. I was curious what yours is. You are an incredibly strong person. And had you sold everything and gone away and came back and restarted, like I would have had complete confidence in you that you would have rebuilt something hugely successful. It's going to be different for everyone.
Sure.
A common theme that I hear from people is they do set it and forget it. They don't look at the accounts every day. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I recommend. Don't look every day.
Yeah.
I have to look every day and it makes you a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
do the due diligence up front. Find that advisor that you really trust. Make sure that the things that you're in make sense for you. You can tolerate the ups and downs. And then also know when you are going to check in. Mm-hmm. You can't never look at it, especially if your advisor isn't calling you. And that's a whole other problem.
Yeah, that's a
problem. but you need to know. I mean, it can be once a year. Mm-hmm. Probably twice a year is better.
Yeah.
More if you have more times per year, if you have more complex things going on. Mm-hmm. You don't want to make changes too often.
Right.
But you do have to look in occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
So don't make yourself crazy. Don't avoid it for forever.
Yeah. I think it's like weighing yourself. Like weighing yourself every day is insane and you shouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're like, my pants aren't fitting the same, let me check in on that.
Yeah. Beware the trend.
Yeah, exactly.
Catch the trend up or catch the trend down.
Yes. But catch it before the train has left the station.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you envision retirement? What's that look like for you?
So luxurious. So much travel. So much indulgence and self-enjoyment. And I want to be generous with people in my life also. Mm. So I want to be able to say, oh, I'm going snowboarding in Switzerland. Come with me. Like, we're staying at the nicest hotel in Interlaken. Yeah, I don't want to think about money when I retire. And I think I picture, I'm really thinking about this. I picture my day to day being simple. Like, I don't want to live in a big fancy house. I do want to drive a nice car. You know me. but I don't need necessarily like a lavish day to day, but I want to be free to travel a lot and to travel not on Southwest.
When you spend money, you want to spend
that's right.
the money.
Yeah. I worked really hard earning it and saving it and growing it. And I want to, enjoy the fruits of my labor and yours.
As you've progressed through being a business owner and life events, do you think that the way that you approach preparedness for retirement has changed? I mean, there's always going to be some, like, as I matured from a 20-something to where you are now, yeah, like some of that comes. But how else do you think being a business owner and being a single woman has influenced that evolution?
I feel like it just like makes me more like hardcore. Like the longer that I'm self-sufficient, the higher the, like, how do I want to word this?
I would think and hope that it is a confidence booster.
Totally. Yeah. Cause I'm like, I've got this.
Yeah.
I think I probably for my romanticized retirement plan should be giving you more money every month and that will happen. But yeah, I think I just feel, I don't feel afraid to explore the stock market. I don't feel afraid to say I'm building wealth. Maybe this is the thing. I think, and I do think it's a more woman thing, but I don't feel any of that like subservient, domestic, play it safe. I don't have an ounce of that in me at all. And that's, I'm not digging anybody who does that because it's a different ride for everyone. But I think being single for a long time, and especially on the heels of almost being married to somebody that I know my life would be horrible with, you know what I mean? I think it's created a mindset where I like am fiercely defensive of my quality of life and my well-being, you know? And so to share that or to introduce other elements to that, the bar just keeps getting higher and higher and my confidence keeps getting higher and higher. And, you know, you do one thing. I mean, you save $10,000 in a shoebox. That's at 26, that was a huge amount of money for me.
Yeah.
Not that I wouldn't mind it now. But, you know, you reach one kind of bar and then you're like, oh, next up, it's this, you know what I mean? So it's like just, it's kind of lovely to watch things that felt big turn into things that feel medium, turn into things that feel small.
I think the confidence that it builds and the, I've done that, I can do more.
Yeah.
I've tackled this, on to the next. I think it permeates through everything.
Yes.
Because all of it is intertwined. I mean, the money facilitates lifestyle in the future. It also impacts what's happening day to day, you know, maybe some compromises on spending money now or not, but it all feeds into who we are as people, the confidence we have. And I think confidence, I've now said that word probably four times in the past three sentences. I think that that's also important in investing and yeah. knowing what you want. So I have confidence in my ability to pick someone that I want to work with mm-hmm. and that this is going to be a good plan. I have confidence that I can get there yeah. and I can make the changes needed, or I can continue on the path that I'm on to make this a reality. Mm-hmm. I think of financial security as providing freedom, freedom to think oh, about yes. other things, do other things, do what you want. It just makes life a lot easier. It doesn't solve problems, but it makes it easier.
I mean, it lets you leave a job that it doesn't work for you, a relationship that doesn't work for you. The freedom in being financially secure is a privilege, but also something that I think people should really do themselves the service of aggressively working towards.
They should. A story that I've debated bringing up, but it has resonated with me, and I think about it regularly. A friend of mine found out her husband was cheating on her, mm-hmm. and she had young children. Mm-hmm. And she had already not been working for many years because he didn't want her to work. Mm-hmm. And she had cashed out the retirement accounts that she had worked really, really hard for when she was working and she was single, to put into a business idea of his.
Oh my God.
And when she came to me the second time he cheated.
Same person.
Okay. No, I mean, he cheated on her with a different person.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Serial cheater. Same husband. Gotcha. Multiple cheating other people. Great. I said, leave him. I'm going to come. I'm going to scoop you and the kids up. We'll figure it out. Like, I don't have the answer, but we'll figure it out. And yeah. she said, Lauren, let's be realistic. I haven't worked in 5 years. Mm-hmm. I have not a penny to my name. Mm-hmm. Starting over with two young children, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. And she's still there.
Oh my gosh.
And it's kind of the thing that shall not be named. Like, it came up once more, and I think he was veering towards maybe cheating again.
They're always veering towards maybe cheating again.
But her piece was, it's not going to make a difference. I have made my choice that for the security of my children mm-hmm. and the life that I have put together, I'm just going to cope with it. And I think had she had her own money, and if she was still working, the answer could have been different. I don't know that it would have, but her reason for not leaving was, I have no money and I haven't worked and I have young children.
And she handed all of her power over to him.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that happens every single day.
It does.
And it's so upsetting. And I think too, I'm sure your friend's a lovely person or else you wouldn't be friends with her, but she's making a decision that not only impacts her, but her kids. And now she's showing, I hope she doesn't have daughters, but she's saying, hey, compromising on something huge like fidelity and actually being in a loving, real relationship is less important to me, or I'm willing to sacrifice all of that and put it. It just is a terrible example for kids. That's the relationship that they're going to base all of their future relationships on. And even if they don't know what actually happened, they know something. You know, they sense that dynamic.
She is the best. She is a really strong individual, and I would still classify her as strong. I mean, emotionally, she puts up with that. God. And that is what her marriage is for forever.
Is she also cheating? Because I feel like she just needs to go like hook no. up with a tennis instructor or something.
No, she's not. Oh, she is all in. Oh, I know, right?
Yeah.
She is all in on being the very best mom for her kids. And I think to them, she probably does demonstrate strength. Like, I think her kids see that. Mm-hmm. I hope the other stays hidden from them for as long as possible. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those weird things that I never would have thought that situation would have happened to her, because yeah. she was probably the friend that pushed me most mm-hmm. to not accept anything less than amazing for myself.
Wow, that's so disappointing.
And I think money is the only difference there.
100%. 100%. It makes me so sad to hear stories like that. And I've watched so many clients go through the exact same thing. And, you know, again, the addition of kids, I think, really complicates things. But it's just a cautionary tale of never truly becoming handing your autonomy over to another human being. Mm-hmm. And that can be a parent or an employer. I mean, there's lots of dynamics where people get into an unhealthy financial balance, but you don't want to be in a situation that you can't get out of if you want to.
And I feel like we have emphasized the power and the importance of the female. Love my male clients too. Mm-hmm. There are great guys out there.
Yes.
Love my relationships where maybe they're the stay at home. Mm-hmm. So it goes both ways. Women don't get as much empowerment in this area. So I wanted to make sure that we communicate to all you ladies. You are strong. You have got this. And you need to have your own.
100%. And sometimes life put scenarios in front of you that require a hard choice. And I invite everybody to make the hard choice if it's the right choice.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
You know, like the right decision can still be very, very hard to make. Sometimes more so.
I'm someone that doesn't love change. And I mean, I made a huge career change, you know, going from public relations to financial advisory. Big, big change. Mm-hmm. It was scary. I think change is scary for most people, and it's how you embrace it. And what the pros and cons are on the other side. And Absolutely. You know what? We all make decisions at some point in our life that don't work out. Mm-hmm. And that is part of the journey of it.
Yes.
And I don't think that that should be what keeps us from trying something.
Totally agree.
Totally veering from financial topics. But change, you know, don't avoid change. Yes. We have to embrace it. We have to get through some of the uncomfortable stuff, some of the things that we wish weren't happening, whether that's a relationship that you have with someone, a life event that we have no control over.
Absolutely.
Can't control everything in your life.
Yes, but you control how you respond to it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Wow, Lauren, this episode has been amazing. Thank you so, so much for listening to these episodes with Lauren. And Lauren, thank you so much. I know how busy you are. The fact that you've taken this much time and given us this much information is so appreciated. If you're listening and you're not doing any savings or anything, I invite you to explore what introducing that to your life could look like in realistic, meaningful ways. Like now, like let's make a commitment to each other that if we're saving, we're going to really just kind of turn on the lights and see what's going on and empower ourselves to make smart choices. I find Lauren to be such a great resource for me. If you have questions for her, I'll link her contact info in our show notes. Of course, I empower you to choose whatever financial investor feels like a good fit, like we discussed. And just thank you so, so much for listening. I hope you got as much out of this episode as I did. And friendly reminder, listeners get 10% off at hawkinsandclover.com with promo code CloverClub, all caps. And you can find us on social media at Clover Club Pod. And that's where we collected all of the questions for today's episode. So if you don't follow us already, please give us a follow because we do some fun stuff on Instagram. And if you found that this episode was beneficial to you, please share it. I rarely ask directly to have episodes shared, but I think that this is one, you know, while you're listening, surely you thought of some friends or family members that could benefit from hearing this information. Please share it because it's really important to me, especially like Lauren said, as women, to just be empowered to make smart financial decisions and equip ourselves to live well.
There is no shame in wherever you are starting.
Yeah.
It could be from absolute zero. It might be you're already doing something. Mm-hmm. There is no shame in any of it. And as Erica said, these questions were ones that you guys came up with. So there's other people out there that are having the same questions, not knowing where to start, not understanding what the market is, just having absolutely no idea. That is okay. Yes. Talking to someone is the biggest first step. You've already gotten the ball rolling by reaching out to someone.
Yes.
You can do it. You
can be proud of yourself for doing that.
You can
totally do it. Oh, man. Okay. Lauren, thank you so, so much.
Loved being here. Super passionate about helping people. Thank you for letting me go on a bit of a mind journey of all the things I think about when I try to guide people. You guys can do it.
Yes. Yay. All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.